The Great Good Place by Henry James. 1. George Dane had opened his eyes to a bright new day, the face of nature well washed by last night's downpour and shining as with high spirits, good resolutions, lively intentions, the great glare of recommencement, in short, fixed in his patch of sky. He had sat up late to finish work, arrears overwhelming, then at last had gone to bed with the pile but little reduced. He was now to return to it after the pause of the night. But he could only look at it, for the time, over the bristling hedge of letters planted by the early postman an hour before, and already, on the customary table by the chimney-piece, formally rounded and squared by his systematic servant. It was something too merciless, the domestic perfection of Brown. There were newspapers on another table, ranged with the same rigor of custom, newspapers too many. What could any creature want of so much news? And each with its hand on the neck of the other, so that the row of their bodiless heads was like a series of decapitations. Other journals, other periodicals of every sort, folded and in wrappers, made a huddled mound that had been growing for several days and of which he had been wearily, helplessly aware. There were new books, also in wrappers as well as disenveloped and dropped again. Books from publishers, books from authors, books from friends, books from enemies, books from his own bookseller who took, it sometimes struck him, inconceivable things for granted. He touched nothing. Approached nothing, only turned a heavy eye over the work, as it were, of the night. The fact, in his high, wide-windowed room, where duty shed its hard light into every corner, of the still, unashamed admonitions. It was the old rising tide, and it rose and rose even under a minute's watching. It had been up to his shoulders last night. It was up to his chin now. Nothing had gone, had passed on while he slept. Everything had stayed, nothing that he could yet feel had died. So naturally, one would have thought, many things on the contrary had been born. To let them alone, these things, the new things, let them utterly alone and see if that, by chance, wouldn't somehow prove the best way to deal with them. This fancy brushed his face for a moment as a possible solution, just giving it, as so often before, a cool wave of air. Then he knew again, as well as ever, that leaving was difficult, leaving impossible, that the only remedy, the true soft effacing sponge, would be to be left, to be forgotten. There was no footing on which a man who had ever liked life, liked it at any rate as he had, could now escape it. He must reap as he had sown. It was a thing of meshes. He had simply gone to sleep under the net and had simply waked up there. The net was too fine. The cords crossed each other at spots too near together, making it each a little tight, hard knot that tired fingers were this morning too limp and too tender to touch. Our poor friends touched nothing, only stole significantly into his pockets as he wandered over to the window and faintly grasped at the energy of nature. What was most overwhelming was that she herself was so ready. She had soothed him, rather, the night before, in the small hours by the lamp. From behind the drawn curtain of his study, the rain had been audible, and in a manner merciful. Washing the window in a steady flood, it had seemed the right thing, the retarding, interrupting thing, the thing that, if it would only last, might clear the ground by floating out to a boundless sea, the innumerable objects among which his feet stumbled and strayed. He had positively laid down his pen as on a sense of friendly pressure from it. The kind, full swish had been on the glass when he turned out his lamp. He had left his phrase unfinished, and his papers lying quite as for the flood to bear them away in its rush. But there still on the table were the bare bones of the sentence.